Hey guys, welcome. Here we are at Future Magic, and we are chatting to Sean, and we're going to get into all things new because this is bright and shiny and it's about to open, and it's the new year. It's just ticked over the new year and it's pretty exciting. So welcome, man.
Thanks, mate. Doing? Thank you.
Yeah, good. Thanks for inviting us and letting us come in here.
No, it's all right.
So
thanks
for help. First things first, mate. What are we drinking?
We're drinking a West Coast IPA, Core Range West Coast, called Welcome to Paradise. The absolute star of the show is Strata and Idaho 7 hops.
Yep.
And just going for like classic Coast vibes, like nice and punch in the face, bitter and dank piney,
nice
a bit of citrus.
Got that nice.
Strata gives a nice kind of bit of a, almost a funk to it.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of this beer. We brewed this particular batch down at Black Hops the same day that we did the Thriller.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, okay. It was the day
Thriller
before.
From Manila.
Same two batches, the same couple of days as that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's exactly, as you said, too, like the colour is... the camera won't be able to pick this up anyway, but I can see how crystal clear it is. That's exactly what you want. Such a good... What's the ABV on it?
It's 6.6.
Yeah, okay. Doesn't taste that big, hey?
Nah.
Tasting really nice.
I'm a fan of beers that are... Might be bigger beers.
Yep.
But... still quite nice and drinkable and...
Yeah, so by the time this goes to air, you're probably already open, trading, running like crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if, as we talked about earlier, you're like, shoot, we forgot this and...
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep.
What are you looking forward to when you're open? What's the number one thing that you'll be able to like sit down and take a breath and be like, fuck yeah, we've done it?
Mate, honestly, there's one thing that I've had quite a few dealings with, obviously, as anyone that's starting a brewery in Southeast Queensland or many other businesses, in terms of licensing, they probably would have dealt with Russell Steele.
Yep.
His big moniker for whether or not a hospo business is successful is you're standing around looking and all you see is smiling, happy faces.
Yep.
To me, that really struck a chord. That's all we want, you know. I kind of set off the cuff the other day to recent business partner. He overheard me saying, and it's kind of become a little motto of ours, we want to have fun and make beer.
Yep.
That's it.
A couple of simple things, hey?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
just
it.
Need a shitload of money to...
Unfortunately, yeah.
Where's the kit from? Where did you get it? How big is it? What's the special about it?
So it's a 10 hack system.
Yep.
We got it from Brutique.
So they got a few in.
Yeah, they do.
Now, don't they?
They do. Yeah, they've had quite a few breweries take on their system. Mm. I think because it.
Well, Hiker.
Yep, Hiker.
Parched.
Yep.
Burley Barrels.
Yep.
Wilgoola.
Easy Times. Stratty. Which is kind of a, like that forms this other side of that, which is this nice community of people that all own the same kit.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can say like, oh, I'm away or I'm sick. Can someone cover for me and come and brew? We need to get this batch out and I'll owe you a favour.
Yeah.
And everyone can brew on everyone's kit.
This happened. What have I done?
Exactly. 100%. It's a 10-hex system, three-vessel brew house. So
yep.
we got a mash kettle, Lauterton and a kettle Whirlpool. And then we've got two 20-hack FVs, four 10-hack, and a 20-hack Bright, and the three down the end are three 10-hack serving tanks. So they'll be able to go to any tap on the bar, just to plug in whatever, you know, we will have certain spots for certain beers on the bar, so rather than constantly change beers around, we'll put that serving tank that's full of that beer onto that beer's tap.
Probably be like your core range
100%,
sort of stuff.
100%.
You don't want to be running out of...
Yeah.
Massive,
yeah,
like blueberry sour of serving tank.
Then a 20 hack Bright.
Yeah,
so what we wanted to do was have plenty of finished beer storage and conditioning capacity, so that we're not having to tie up production. If we need to do like a canning run, something like that, we've got a little bit of flexibility. And I think the serving tanks are something kind of unique that not a lot of places have, which, you know, it's cool for punters seeing like, oh, I can trace this line from a tank that goes all the way to a tap. Oh, this is cool. I'm drinking straight out of the tap.
I think it's cool, but also just ease of handling on your end.
100%.
Like the amount of kegs and handling, manual labor that'll save you,
the
reduce the risk of infection,
all
of those things, oxidation.
Yep.
You know, it's there, it's good. It's on CO2.
Yep.
Push it out.
And on the CO2 front, obviously, so this is one thing that we work with Brutique on, was making sure that as the level in the tank goes down, the potential for it to overcarbonate gets higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little pressure transducer on the top, so that you're going to be aware of the actual amount of CO2 in the tank at any one time. So as it goes down with every pour, it's not going to overcarbonate. It's going to stay the same carbonation the whole way down. So if you've got a bright tank, you'd rip off a pallet of kegs at a time.
Yeah.
You know, it's for 450 litres, something like that.
Yep.
So you know that you're going to have to pressurise that tank differently at the end of that.
Yeah.
If you're pouring 400 mils off at a time, no one's going to keep track of that.
No.
So it's really easy to overcarbonate them. So having that little bit of technology behind it, behind such a simple thing, I think was kind of a cool little selling point.
This interview break brought to you by our friends at Bintani.
We're going to talk about malt. So barley is the traditional sort of grain that we use in beer, but you can also use wheat, sorghum. There's rye, there's a whole bunch of different grains that you can use. You can even use corn, rice. There's a whole bunch of grains essentially that you can use. Anything that can be malted can be used in beer. There's a lot of things that can be used in beer, but we're talking about malt and the malt flavour. So barley itself is one of the most predominant grains in the world. So it's used to make malt, so that's just not used in beer. Think of single malt whiskey like Scotch whiskey, bourbons, any of your spirits. Some vodkas are made with grain, some are made with potatoes, but we're not getting into that. So malt. So what is malt exactly? So it's a grain that has been malted. How do you malt a grain? There's a process around that. It's a pretty good process. Don't know how it got worked out. Like, they've obviously been making beer for thousands of years and don't know what's happened. Someone either just sat down and a mistake happened and then they worked out, oh yeah, this makes a really cool beverage that makes me go off my head. Or someone was a scientist who knew what they were doing and just never documented it. Pretty interesting, pretty cool stuff. Catch up the next break. We'll talk about how you make malt.
Yeah, someone said to me the other day, like, are you excited? Are you nervous? I'm like, no, I'm just keen.
Just want to get it.
I'm keen as throw the door open, get beer in tanks.
Yeah.
You spend so long and so much time and effort and emotional, mental, physical energy building something like this.
Yeah.
And everyone goes through, regardless of how you do it, everyone goes through this same process as starting a brewery of this is the bloody hardest thing you're going to do in a very long time, if not your life.
The space is pretty big. Is this future planning for like more fermenters or a can machine or
yes,
or bottles? Are you seeing something in the future that we can't see? Is bottles going to make a comeback?
I think cans are here to stay. I think a lot of people would. A lot of people have strong opinions on this. Honestly, I think I'm one of the firmly rooted in the can, and on the can side of the fence. Mm. Except you know those kind of gorgeous rare collection pieces, fermented stuff, and so we want to do this
like table beer and
100%. We've got plenty of space in here for, as I said before, if we're lucky enough to be able to expand.
Yep.
We've got room for a whole full row of fermenters down the middle.
Yeah.
A row of, so we've got 10 and 20 hec. We've got a room for 330 hec at the front, with still space for a small canning line.
Yeah.
The whole place was designed with a bit of future proofing in mind.
Future magic if you hadn't thought about the magic you need in the future, right?
Yeah. So it was all really intentionally done and kind of working with Brutique and the guys at Wellbrewed.
Yep.
So Jake, Clemmy, and Lockie with them on the design of the whole place and you know, if we want to do these future proofing things, having a talk about how the best way to do it is.
Yep.
I'm really happy with the result. I think we'll end up with hopefully a pretty good brewery.
Now, you mentioned earlier crowdfunding.
Yes.
So that got you to this point. What would you have done though if that didn't go through? Like, what was your fallback? Like, was there going to be some shit? How are we going to do this? Or was it just going to be, I think I heard you say in another interview or something that maybe you'd just open as a bar with beer that you maybe contract brewed, or I'm not sure. But what was the...
We had a few,
obviously it was super successful. Like, what was your minimum that you target and then what did you hit?
Minimum was 200. Yep. We ended up hitting 298.
Yeah, sweet.
So it's like 149%.
Yeah.
I think it was. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, awesome support,
which, you obviously. Know, as a new brewery doing it, I think that's... I think that particular crowdfund has been somewhat polarizing to a few people.
Yeah, it was super unique. And
We wanted to, the idea of it was to get that community behind us and have a community that was, have a brew that was built by and for a community.
Yep.
And it really achieved that.
Yeah.
Goal for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm really super happy with how it's gone. If we hadn't have done it, we had a couple of backup finance options, the crowdfund itself, it still didn't get us 100% where we needed to go. So we did utilize a couple of those.
Yep.
And because of the springboard that crowdfund has led us to now, we're in a pretty good spot.
The proof is in the pudding.
People have trusted us enough to invest in a crowdfund
in your dream and...
So we've got a duty of care.
Yep.
In my opinion, to try and be responsible, and I want to do that, and that is by way of a thank you to them. So you trusted us. Let us show you what we can do with that trust that you've given us.
Yeah.
And I hope that we're on the right track.
This interview break brought to you by our friends at Convoy.
Alrighty, so before the break, we were talking about malt and how it comes to be. So this is barley. So it's like, it's just a little grain. You would have seen this. This is thing, all sorts of stuff. So what it has in here, this is not milled. So how they make it is they get the grain and they germinate it. And then it's different for all types of malt. So there's all different kinds of malts. There's hundreds and hundreds of malts all over the world. But basically what they do is they get the barley and they germinate it. So they do this by adding water to it. They soak it, add some water to it at the set temperature. They germinate it at the right temperature, and the sugar that's in there to start the germination, to start the plant growing, this plant thinks it's gonna start growing. And then it grows a little shoot out to anywhere between 3/4 to an inch long. And once it gets to that point, the maltsters cut that off. And how do they do that? Well, they get rid of all the water and they start heating up the malt. They churn it around and they heat it up and they bake it essentially. And how they bake it is in these huge big turbines. It doesn't have to be huge. You can do it at home in your oven. But how they do it to make it on this sort of a scale is they put in these big ovens, and it's normally steam driven. It can be all sorts of things, but they steam it off and they get rid of that shoot and it stops. So the sugars that the seed started to produce in there stall, and that stays in the grain itself, in the malt itself. And then from there, you can make all sorts of different malts. We'll get into that in other breaks and whatever, but basically, that sugar in the grain is malt, and that's what we wanna get out. So that's why we crush the malt, so that we can get at the sugar and put it into the beer. Now, we're sitting here, man. I'm feeling like a really nice breeze. You got these two big-ass fans in here. This is good in the venue. Like, it's nice and breezy. It's not open, obviously, this end, but there's still a nice breeze blowing through here. How many can you fit in here?
We're hoping to be able to fit on the main taproom floor, probably around between 150 to 200.
Yep.
And then we'll be opening up a mezzanine level as well. That's just a fair bit of demolition that we can't get done in time for the main open, because it's a lot of work. But that should be about another 100. And then we've got about 70 square meters outside, so that should be 40-50.
So you're near the end now, man. You can almost see the light at the end of that tunnel. What's your one thing in here that you just like, I'm so glad that we got this, or that you did this? Like, there's without it, you would constantly be regretting going, oh, we should have done.
Probably the floor.
Yep.
Probably the brewery slab, getting that done, designed properly, poured properly,
epoxied
properly, the right amount of fall, manufacture all that into it and get the floor right from the get-go.
Yep.
Everything else becomes easier once you do that.
Yep.
That's that's the typical brewer's answer. Like, I'm so glad our floors work.
My water drains.
Honestly, there's so many of those. It'd be between that and the crowdfund.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The crowdfund from a social and societal thing, and to give us that kind of takeoff lift.
Yep.
That a lot of new businesses want and need for, on the social side of things, definitely that crowdfund. But also the crowdfund If anyone is watching this and is thinking whether or not they should do a crowdfund, do it. It's the hardest thing you'll ever bloody do, but it puts you through probably 2 or 3 years worth of business growth in a few months.
Yep.
Like you've got to know your company inside and out. You've got to know your morals, your expectations, know your customers, know how to market to those customers, get all your socials down, get all your branding down, get all your policies down, get all this stuff set out that normally takes companies a long time to figure out, and they kind of backtrack and think, how did we want to do this at the start and how do we relate that to now when we've got to do it?
Yep.
Doing that from the very beginning, I think it's actually helped us become a more mature company from the get-go. So on just how to run a business side of things, I'd recommend anyone, go and talk to Virtual and say what's needed.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're wanting to do a crowdfund, obviously don't waste the time.
But if it's on you, it costs you money. It does. They
take their admin fee and a cut of what you raise.
Yep.
Yeah. So taking care with things, you know, the main advice that I got given and tried to abide by was, know what things you have to spend money on and don't be afraid of spending money on those things, like getting your floors right, making sure that your tanks are all the ones that you want and in the configuration that you want, because it's really bloody hard and expensive to change later. Yeah. But things you don't need to spend money on, unless you have the money to spare, don't spend money on. It's a massive game of budgeting because you've got so much outlay before you can see a cent of it.
Yeah. 12 taps?
Yep.
How many cores, how many specialties?
4 in core range at the moment, and there is a fifth that we actually need a little bit of help from community on. So core range as it stands at the moment is Magic Stick with the Session Pale Ale that you had before, Solo Lager, Welcome to Paradise, the one we just drank, and West Coast, and Galaxy Dust, the New England IPA. And then the fifth one is Pale Ale. So the idea with that is we never thought of a name for it. We never wanted to think of a name for it because we wanted to leave that scarily in the hands of the community.
Yeah, okay.
You know, beering with beer faces.
I was just going to say, that's what
it's been the most common suggestion so far, so please stop suggesting beering with beer face.
Yeah, that's a veto.
But you know, that's one of those things I think really helps cement you in a community is letting the community own part of you and letting the community own what we're going to call one of our Corange beers So a lot of people have commented that we don't have a sour in Corange, and that's for a really good reason. I think that, you know, the most common sour in Australia is just your general kind of fruited kettle sour type of thing.
Or something.
And half the time, they're either really expensive to produce or they're out of season or, you know, so half the year it's great, half the year it'll make do.
Yeah.
So we're putting our sours in seasonal range.
Yep.
And we're going to be using whatever fruits are in season. And so there'll be like a 3-monthly change on that. And there's a few beers that we're doing that with, and then the odd kind of special release and stupid beer that we want to make for Gabs or whatever.
So we've refilled our glasses.
We have.
So that we can say thanks very much for having us here.
No worries.
Let us have the chat. We're going to do a cheers now, and then hopefully we're going to ask you to give us a tour. We'll see how we go.
100%.
So,
no worries. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, mate.